Up next, it's hour one of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, happy Future Tuesday. Hey, Mrs. Future.
Hello, honey.
Yeah, another beautiful day in paradise here in Sanity Cruz.
Nothing to complain about from my end, just all this bad news in the rest of the world.
Yeah. We had to end up cutting trees to get home.
That's true. Good exercise.
In Boulder Creek, you carry a chainsaw in your trunk.
That's true.
You know, and yesterday, I had the intuition to carry one, and I was
very impressed. You went out the door into the wind with your chainsaw in hand, and sure enough, you couldn't come home without it because that tree was blocking the road.
Yep. Oh, I was wondering where we were going to get some firewood, so now I know.
Now you know. Right. We have to stop by now that we've cleared the road and spend a little more time loading up the cut-up firewood.
Yeah. They say that in Boulder Creek that if a tree goes across Highway 9, usually it's gone before Caltrans can get there to fix it.
That's true. Those trees are very useful to us folks up there in the hills.
Absolutely.
Keep us warm at night.
The hard part now for me is to collect the hot tub cover, which flew down the cliff.
Oh, yeah. You're going to have to go on belay.
Get a rope and hang dangle off this.
Right.
Exciting. Where's
my
anti-gravity boots? I'll tell you.
Couldn't you send the drone?
Yeah.
Send in the drones.
The drone will pick up the hot tub lid. Yeah, that'll be the day. Yeah, we need grippers on the drones. That's for sure. Something more than a 4K camera. Though the 4K camera is a nice killer app.
The hand.
Having a gripper. It's Canada Arm, like on the space shuttle or the space station.
That would be fun. Yeah. Or maybe one of those robotic chefs, those robot arms that can do everything in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Whisk your eggs and flip your burgers.
Well, that would be good in the kitchen.
Yeah, well, it would be very good on a drone, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe. You'd have to have a pretty big drone.
Yeah, more than what we got. But it does remind me, one of the articles we have is about the future of robots and how robots won't look like robots.
I was just getting to it. Let's read it together.
Okay, yeah, we'll just do that for the first, as we mentioned that. Because there's no reason why robots have to look like anything. You know, it's totally up to us. They won't be limited to humanoid phones. Though I tell you, the Boston Robotics backflipping Atlas was quite impressive, I thought.
You know, robots that can dance are amazing and scary, but they're making an effort to make them friendlier.
Yeah, yeah. And the idea of what they are is changing, too. Researchers are now thinking that shoes, for example, can intelligently support your gait or change stiffness as you're running or walking. And they can adapt to different services or help you even do backflips, not just the robots.
Your shoes will be more like a Stairmaster. You'll just put them on your feet and that's it. Now they're on their own.
Yes, that's right, Mrs. Future. It's a burgeoning new field called material robotics. Mm-hmm. It's a vision of researchers at Oregon State, University of Colorado, Yale, and Ecole Polytechnique in France. So there's a disappearing of the robots into the background of everyday life. I think that's the takeaway that I got from that, that they're imbued with intelligence. But what's imbued with intelligence? It doesn't have to be any specific form. It can be a shoe. It can be a shirt. It can be a car. It can be a coffee pot.
Well, what is the thing that makes a machine a robot? We don't call our automobiles robots.
Well, we don't. But unless we start talking to them, and it's a talking car then, right? It's not a robot. But then what is a robot at this point? It changes the whole...
What is a robot?
It's an outdated concept. That's what it is. Everything is just getting smarter. And material scientists are excited about imbuing intelligence into everything. So,
all right, I'm going to read you a definition of a robot.
Okay, let's go back.
A robot is a machine, sometimes resembling a human being in appearance, designed to function in place of a living agent. Now, who knows what a living agent is? I hate definitions like that.
Living means bio, right? Mm-hmm. Biological.
An agent means it does something.
Yeah.
It has a purpose. Okay, it's a machine that has a purpose. and it's designed to function in place of something else that has a purpose.
Well, like a car could do some of that instead of a horse,
it's
right?
It's pretty generic.
Yeah. So just think of everything as getting smarter. I think the term robot is changing. I'll put it that way.
Right. One of the examples they have, robot is also defined as an automatic traffic light. So there you go.
I don't think it fits all. I don't know. I have a hard time thinking of my traffic light as a robot.
Just telling you what the Oxford English Dictionary says.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's it. You know, there's now, and then there's the future, and that's what we're looking at here.
I like some of these interesting alternative robots here.
Yeah.
I like the artificial muscle.
Yeah, yeah, muscles. Is a muscle by itself a robot?
Well,
or does it have to be part of a larger thing?
In this case, this muscle has an inner skeleton that can be made of metal, or it could be a sheet of plastic folded in a certain pattern, surrounded by air or fluid, and sealed inside a plastic bag that serves as the skin.
Plastic bag?
Yeah, well, this is a robot. It doesn't have to look like a normal piece of muscle. It could be a plastic bag.
Well, the architecture of these artificial muscles, that does open the design to create, I guess you call low-cost actuation systems. Like for the drone, we can have muscles on the drone.
I was thinking more like those massage chairs that they have in malls.
Oh, my God, yeah. Everyone should have a smart massage chair. I agree. I have worn out several massage devices looking for the perfect one. But hey, look, there's no substitute for a good masseuse. I'll give you that. We have some great ones in Santa Cruz. But be able to go for hours every day.
Without getting tired. Allowing you to adjust yourself to where you want it, a little more pressure, a little less pressure.
So I'm all for putting more smarts in the massage chairs and more options, more types of massage would be possible. I think that would be a really excellent use for robotics technology.
Mm. You probably would also like to have a robotic dog scratcher that you could just scratch your animals.
Well, I like scratching my animals. I think that's part of the pleasure of having an animal is to pet them.
Okay, so robotic dog scratchers for you.
They should have one, and I'm all for having the machines programmable by the animals, too. I don't think we have to do it all. I think we should give them some controls.
So when their humans aren't home,
the animals should have... So they can be able to scratch their back if they want to, just like they...
Automatic dog scratchers.
Yeah, yeah, just like they eat when they want to or whatever. I can give... Of course, they say the animals don't know control when it comes to food. Maybe you have to...
A common problem among species.
You have to limit it a little bit to our pets. They know no bounds.
Mm. Sure.
Yeah. But I think the machine should not necessarily just be for us. They should definitely have them for our creatures. Anyway, it's an interesting article on robotics, the future of robotics, and why future robots won't look like robots.
That's right. We can reconceptualize what robots can look like.
To me, a massage chair is a good robot.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So should we take the break now before we go into the...
All right, we're going to go early to the break.
Things of the universe.
Okay, what's after the break?
Well, I did want to talk about these mysterious clouds.
Dr. Future Show. We'll be back. Speak.
Yes. Okay. I was...
Your mic is waiting. Wisdom.
I was cueing a special effect. I was cueing a special effect, Mrs. Future. And... Oh, there we go. Space news. What do you think?
Ooh, are these sounds from deep space?
Yeah. What kind of eerie sounds. But I bring that one on, especially for this next story. There's mysterious hydrogen clouds that have been mapping. We've mapped them, moving at incredible speeds through the Milky Way. Mysterious hydrogen clouds. Awfully peculiar mysteries in space. This is one of the top ones. They're high-velocity, mysterious clouds, enormous, fast-moving clouds. They form a halo of the Milky Way. Using radio telescope data, we've now been able to study them really closely. And these big clouds, which, well, they're huge. They're millions of times the mass of the sun, 80,000 light years in diameter. And they drift around in the galactic halo outside the plane of the Milky Way. And they move at really fast speeds, 40 to 60 miles per second.
Wow.
And they're distinguishable from the rotational movement of the galaxy itself. So they're separate from all that. So what are they? What are these giant clouds that are out there? Not something you think about from an everyday perspective, from normal knick-knack reality. You'd never bother to pay attention to this. But you're listening to the Dr. Future Show. So we do, and we're kind of curious about these. What are these high-velocity clouds? So there's been a research team investigating them to see WTF, what's going on with them.
Mm-hmm.
One of them looks like it's related to these nearby clouds called the Large and the Small Magellanic Clouds.
Mm-hmm.
We can kind of see, well, maybe that makes sense. That material from that is falling into our galaxy from the outside, or it kind of looks likely might be that case. But there are other big clouds out there that are even more perplexing, that have different compositions with different origins. Some have very little amounts of metal in them, and others are very heavy in metal. And why is that? The Parkes Observatory in Australia and the Elfsberg 100-meter radio telescope in Germany have been looking at that. They say that these clouds cover 13% of our sky. And they're moving towards or away from us at these huge speeds of several hundred kilometers per second. Their radio telescope information reveals that these clouds have some anatomy to them, a structure, like large sinuous tendon-like structures, filamental structures, things like that. That's what the latest information that we've got, that they have this kind of filament-type structure. But we don't know what they are. We're still investigating. So
if you just think about watching clouds and how much fun that is here on the Earth,
mm-hmm.
it's probably really fun to watch clouds at the level of the galaxy, too. However, it would take a really long time before you could spot a face or a dog or an angel or a dragon in the clouds of space.
Yeah.
Even though they're moving really fast, to us, they probably look like they're moving really slow.
Yeah, it looks like it's in slow motion. Though we do have time lapse, so we can play with that. But these filaments, these clumps, these branches within the clouds are never been seen before. And there's a map we have on our drfutureshow.com/links page where you can take a look at those filamental things.
Hmm.
So that's a new mysterious thing in the universe. And while we're in space, I believe I mentioned last week that, you remember the Voyager 1? We talked about that briefly. That was our first spacecraft that went way out there.
That's
and
right.
Still out there.
The first human-made object to leave the solar system.
It's in interstellar space. It's starting to have a hard time aiming its antenna at Earth. It's so far out there. But it needed little bits of gas, little thruster gas, to keep an antenna focused on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of running out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the gang at JPL has figured out how to use the backup rocket jets that originally designed to help the Voyager aim its instruments at planets and the moon to aim it at Earth so that we can get a few more years of use out of the Voyager craft as it travels through interstellar space, the first human object to be outside of the solar system entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've been testing, sending signals to the spacecraft, and they've been successful in getting these little jets to work and help keep the antenna focused so that we can maintain communication.
Wow.
So it was quite a megilla to get it to that.
So for 37 years, these jets have just been freezing, dormant in space. The last time they used them was when Voyager was at Saturn, right? It was passing through Saturn.
Yeah.
And now they've... Now
got it working again. It takes 19 hours and 35 minutes to reach the antenna at Goldstone here in California.
Mm-hmm. So,
and it worked.
20-minute delay, huh? We send the Voyager a message. We wait 20 minutes. The Voyager
19,
gets it.
No, 19 hours.
Oh, hours.
35-minute delay.
Oh.
It's 20 minutes to Mars.
Oh.
This is a lot further.
Oh, you said hours, not minutes.
Did I?
Yeah, I think you, well,
and they didn't say it. 19 hours and 35 minutes. That's
wow.
right.
Wow. 19 hours. Yeah. So you send a message today, come back tomorrow.
Right.
And you'll finally hear what Voyager has to say about it.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm wondering if they're going to try to get a nice picture of our whole solar system from out there. I would imagine they might try.
I think our solar system just looks like a little blue dot now. The sun looked like a little blue dot from the rings of Saturn. And that's the brightest thing in our solar system.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, remember the blue dot was the Earth. That was from Saturn, wasn't it?
The blue dot was just a little pixel, but there are also pictures of what the sun looked like. The sun just looks like a small star.
Well, let's get a little bit closer to Earth. I got one other space news here.
Yeah, bring it back to Earth.
Well, close to Earth. There's some news from China about they're planning to build a robot moon base.
Ooh, China wants to get to the moon and set up a robot?
Well, again, you know, robots, not what they used to be. But this is a base. Robot, I think in this case, that means they don't have humans there.
Right. And so like a lunar lander.
If they can have a base on the moon, they can do more complicated research and experiments. And one of the things the Chinese want to do is send lunar rocks back to the Earth. And this would be a way in which they could more readily do that. A sustainable station would also allow them to study the geography more carefully, have better energy efficiencies for their lunar rovers. They could have a base station for rovers going around the planet. It could also have a very big solar power generator to keep everything charged up.
So they're going to put a permanent station, like a solar power station.
This is their latest.
On the dark side of the moon.
No, not the dark side of the moon.
Oh.
No, if it's solar, you have to be in the sun.
I know. I'm just trying to make sense of what their plan is. They definitely are going to the dark side of the moon with their next launch.
The schedule for their next dark side of the moon project, I think this is what you're talking about, is in 2018. And they have a lunar probe that's going there in 2018. I think that's what you're thinking of. And they're also launching another probe to orbit, land, and return so that they can get some rocks off. They get their rocks off the moon. It will collect and return rock samples.
All right. Chang'e 5.
Yeah. And then they're planning to launch three more missions to study the moon's south pole. Now, why the south pole? That's a question that would be good to ask.
Why? What do you think?
I have no idea. It's something to look at. South pole. Why the lunar south pole? I know that the south pole of the Earth is considered quite mysterious. So maybe the south pole of the moon might have some bearing there. Maybe it's the entrance to the hollow moon theory. I don't know.
All right, stay tuned. I'm sure we'll find out more.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the moon is coming in now. This hopefully will inspire us to do something more. I'd like to see the U.S. do something more with lunar explorations. And we do have the Google $10 million plan. If you can send a ship to the moon and send back a live picture from the moon, then that could be...
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Yeah, we got Dr. Toy coming in at 3 o'clock to give us the latest and greatest and the cool toys for the new year.
Awesome.
So, and Christmas season. So look forward to that. And also good news from Google. They just hit their 100% renewable energy target. 3 gigawatts worth of power.
Wow.
Yes.
Renewable power at Google.
Officially running on 100% renewable energy through solar and wind power. They'll be receiving 3 gigawatts of power capacity from 3 wind power plants.
All right, Google, show the way.
They've been investing heavily with the cost reduction that's been going on with renewables. Their renewables are way down in cost, 60 to 80% cheaper than they were just a few years ago. And they started in 2010 when they purchased 114 megawatt production capacity from a wind farm in Iowa. Since then, they've got involved with over 20 renewable energy projects with an investment of about $3.5 billion. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute, $3.5 billion, 3 gigawatts. Oh, okay.
All right. Just 1 billion per gigawatt.
Something like that.
Such a deal.
Yeah. So we have a caller, Mrs. Future?
Oh, we do. We have Richard from Felton who wants to say something about cosmic radiation.
Yes.
Hey, Richard, how's your cosmic radiation?
Good or bad? Feeling okay?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask a practical question. I don't think we're able to shield ourselves from cosmic radiation. In other words, if we want to go to Mars, it's going to take our bodies apart.
Yeah, that's one of those big problems that they have to solve when they design spaceships.
Well, it's true that Mars has no global magnetic field to deflect energetic particles, and its atmosphere is much thinner than the Earth's, so there's only minimal protection.
Van Allen radiation belt that we have to get past, right?
But yeah, let me just say it really quick. We don't have any way to shelter ourselves from that radiation, correct?
They're working on it. That's one of the big areas of radiation protection is a huge topic, and a lot of research is going into that.
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to be able to stop it.
Well,
I really don't think you're going to be able to stop it. I don't think there's an element. There's not mylar. There's nothing that's going to shield gold. I know all that stuff that they try to shield magnetic.
Well, let's see. I just did a Google search on that. How are we protected from cosmic radiation? Well, let's see. Beta particles are more penetrating, but they can be absorbed by a few millimeters of aluminum. However, in cases where high-energy beta particles are emitted, shielding must be accomplished with low atomic weight materials like plastic, wood, water, or acrylic glass as well. So there seems to be some things that protect it. It looks like it is an issue, but there's more and more research trying to look at how to stop it. Ionizing radiation is apparently one of the big problems.
Okay, well, thank you for talking about it.
All right. Thanks, Richard.
Yeah. One of the things they do is a planned exposure where you try to limit yourself to a certain amount of exposure. It's like when they go to Chernobyl, work on it, or Fukushima.
Right.
And there's emergency exposure. There's limiting your exposure. There's the distance. Increasing your distance seems to make an effect, at least for ground-based radiation. Space-based radiation, sometimes you'll get hit by a wave coming from the sun. Mm-hmm. You definitely should avoid those. Mm. Now, I do know that also thick amounts of water, they have a water shield that seems to absorb a lot of radiation as well. But it is an issue for sure.
Okay, we have Troy from Felton who wants to make a prediction. You want to hear that one?
Yeah, what's your prediction? Troy, is it a New Year's prediction?
Hi, Troy.
Hey, hello, futures. Greetings. Happy holidays.
Hey.
I'm going to make two predictions. But I would like to say that this hydrogen cloud traveling, I think that it's either being caused by a vacuum or gravity. And of course, space is a vacuum, so some sort of vacuum would have to be drawing that at that speed. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there would be some sort of signature or visible waves behind it, force behind it. Mm. So
well, that's
my
interesting.
Prediction is...
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I think about
I
that.
I know
all the
that
time.
One of the things we covered on the show was the fact that they've reclassified the neighborhoods of space, the giant super mega clusters, of which the Virgo supercluster was previously thought of as our galactic neighborhood. And they actually came up with a larger spatial structure, of which the Virgo supercluster is just one little filament. And that larger supercluster is called Launia Kea. And Launia Kea is all of the known objects in space that are going towards the biggest thing in the universe that we know of, which is called the Great Attractor. So it's like the Great Attractor is this giant center of our known universe towards which everything that we've ever identified is either going towards or away from.
Oh, okay, so we're kind of on the same page here. So my prediction is, number one, Colonel Terry's going to call this program and tell you how smart he is.
Yeah. Number two, no, he's going to tell you how smart Mrs.
Future is. Hey, you know what, Troy, he called since we've been talking. He just chimed in. That's hilarious. Your prediction has already come true.
Hey, smart lady.
And then my second prediction is that Billy Sunshine will call and prove to everyone how dumb he is. So,
should we keep
my call, guys.
Should we keep them both on at the same time and see what happens?
All right. First, we're going to go to Bobby in San Francisco since he called first. Okay, here we go. Hello, Bobby in San Francisco. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, can you hear me?
I hear you.
Yeah. Oh, great. I was going to talk about the reason why they're going to the South Pole. Oh. It's just like when you want to go to like Mars or the Earth. There's a lot of water frozen because the poles don't melt. Mm. And actually at the pole, you can actually put a solar panel up and have it constantly 24/7.
Really?
Of course, that makes total sense.
Point at the sun. So that's the reason why they're going to the poles.
They get water and
on the moon. Yeah.
Constant sunshine.
But what about protection from solar radiation and stuff like that? How do they deal with that at the South Pole?
Yes, they don't have the Valon radiation belt protection that we have from our electromagnetic poles of the Earth.
So it seems to me there must be a way of mining all that radiation, right? There must be a way of doing something with all that energy that's just loose free radical energy and channel it into something useful.
Well, if you watch Gaia TV and you listen to David Wilcock, he's talking about DNA activation, and it's actually coming from these cosmic rays that we're actually, the solar system is passing through this magnetic and hydrogen helium cloud that's moving at 50,000 miles per second toward us. And so it's actually causing a bow in the heliosphere that's surrounds our solar system from the sun. The sun has its own protective electromagnetic, something like the Van Allen radiation belt, but it's being distorted by this new cloud that we're moving through in our galactic space.
So this is a cloud that's smaller than what we were talking about before.
Yeah, this is internal to our galaxy.
It's sort of intergalactic space. It's sort of as we're passing through galactic space, this is a cloud we're passing through. I see.
Yeah, and this is a new cloud that just discovered by both the Voyager 1 and 2. They hit this bow shock wave that they didn't anticipate, you know, and it's coming from... Yeah, they're not quite sure where it's coming from, but anyway, it will cause changes to our DNA. Mm. So apparently, so that's another interesting thought. So anyway, I'll leave it at that.
Okay, Bobby.
Thanks, Bobby. Yeah. I'm sure our DNA is going to go through a lot of changes in real soon.
Yeah,
I mean, you have some articles on CRISPR-Cas9 how we're going to introduce some of those changes ourselves.
I think we heard that you were talking about an iPad sale at Costco too.
Save $30 on your iPad. Members
Gosh,
only.
News comes around very quickly.
Right. Isn't it amazing?
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Bobby.
Thanks, Bobby.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Bye. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Well, there you go. Under $300, you can get an iPad.
Ready for our next caller?
Sure. Go for it.
Guess who?
Colonel Terry?
Welcome to the show, Colonel Terry.
Hi, smart, beautiful lady. Why don't I wait until after the break you're going to take?
Oh, well, then, you know, we have to kibitz for at least a minute before that happens.
Oh, all right. Good time. Well, first of all, yeah, I am smart. I'll admit to it. Very smart. Oh, your husband's darn smart, too. And, Alan, you do such a great job preparing for your programs.
Oh, thank you.
Let me compliment you on behalf of lots of listeners.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And you're married to a woman who proves that a lady can be both beautiful and very smart.
Yes.
Highly intelligent, even.
Yeah, it was hope for us all.
Well, thank you, Colonel.
Google, the 3 gigawatt, did you say it's wind power entirely?
No. They said that it's renewable entirely.
But they're mostly wind from the 3 gigawatts. They have a lot of solar as well, but I think the majority of it is coming from wind right now.
As a smart technical guy, Alan, is that the way we obviously should go in terms of long-term efficiencies, that is, electricity? And you know what? Edison said in 1931, our future energy will come from the sun. yeah. by the way.
Yeah, there's more and more coming from the sun as the solar panels get more efficient. It's just they haven't been as efficient as wind in converting the energy. Like solar panels have been classically 15 to 20% efficient. That's been a problem. But we've rapidly reduced the cost of solar and have are increasing the efficiencies. So there's a certain point where it will surpass wind as a viable alternative. I mean, we use solar. We've been off the grid for 13 years, and it works great. But we have to have lots of panels because of that 15% efficiency.
All right. We are getting ready to go to the break, so.
Do you want to hold on?
Hold for the question, then. Could we shift all of our mobility to stored electrons? And where is Google storing those 3 gigawatts?
Well, storage is rapidly increasing, too. It's going to go through asymptotic growth over the next few years.
Dr. Future Show, we'll be right back. Thanks for listening.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Yes, Colonel Terry, it looks like storage of electricity is becoming more efficient. It's been one of the boondoggles in energy is being able to store it.
What do you attribute that to, Alan?
It's hard. It's hard to store energy.
No, what do you attribute the increases to? Is it just more capacities being built, or has the technology advanced?
Well, the technology is getting incrementally better for battery storage. Elon Musk was asked about that. And instead of going for some more radical forms of batteries, he's been working with the lithium-ion batteries because there's like a 15 to 20% increase in capacity every year just with that kind of battery design. But there are other alternatives coming online as well for storage.
Before I go, let me jump this to now vehicles.
Yeah.
You know the push for hydrogen vehicles, hydrogen cars and trucks.
Yes.
Push that California had with Schwarzenegger at one point. Oh, we're going to have hydrogen storage areas. And there was some prototyping of that here in California and elsewhere. And has anyone done an analysis, to your knowledge, of comparing hard number crunching and demonstration? Could we go to hydrogen-fueled vehicles? They certainly are cleaner, and they produce water vapor as a byproduct, versus just straight electricity and storing electricity so you go in, you recharge. What's your technical view, Smart Doctor Future? Has hydrogen got a better future than us pushing to electric vehicles?
Well, battery electric vehicles are running away with the prize here. A big battery and an electric motor beats a fuel cell, which is a small battery and electric motor. They're much easier to fill with fuel.
Yeah.
So in terms of the advantages of hydrogen fuel cells, they have a higher efficiency than diesel or gas engines. They operate silently compared to internal combustion engines, and they eliminate pollution caused by burning fossil fuels for hydrogen fuel cells. The only byproduct is water, so they're pretty good in that respect. Now, I think more of a cost-effective thing with electrical right now, but fuel cells definitely look like we could, at some point in the not-too-distant future, run more on water, which would make a lot of sense considering we're a water planet.
Now, how is that done?
Well, the big boondoggle there is getting the hydrogen from the water molecule and splitting the water molecule, the H2O molecule. It takes electricity, a fair amount of it, to create the separation of the hydrogen and the oxygen, to get the hydrogen now. But there are a number of projects underway to make it more efficient to break the molecular bonding of the hydrogen with the oxygen molecule. A combination of things will probably work. They're finding maybe some electricity, maybe a little, I think there's an Italian approach of using a jiggling the water molecule in a certain frequency. It seems to make the bond weaker. And when we figure out the combination of jiggling electricity, sonics maybe, that can create the break of that bond, we should be able to run our internal combustion engines on hydrogen.
All right. Now, what's your prediction forecast? And should we just push in the meanwhile for total electricity, obviously hybrid electrics, to reduce our fossil fuel pollution of the planet? Or should we in parallel push for, again, electric vehicles with stored electrons and hopefully that we get this hydrogen fuel from water, as you've just described?
Yeah. Me, I tend to go more towards electric right now because we already have a big push in developing the infrastructure for it. The big problem with hydrogen is that it is fuel infrastructure access. Now, if we do have a breakthrough in hydrogen where we can just fill up the gas tank with water, you know, we'll do that. It'll be way more efficient than building new infrastructure for anything. We'll have it already.
In May of 98, I came back from a meeting I'd helped organize where Bill Clinton rejected telling the U.S. public the reality about fossil fuels, okay?
Uh-huh.
And that we must change because he didn't want the American people to dislike him if he told them the truth. Seriously, okay? And I came back to my office and I leaned back and said, the only thing that's going to save this planet environmentally will be achievable miracles.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's exactly what we're creating.
Okay.
Innovation has always saved the day
Turn Colonel Terry, one of the things that I always think about, people talk about the capacity issue and the fact that we are currently deriving probably in excess of 80% of our actual fuel needs for heat and transportation from fossil fuels, either coal, gas,
run
or natural gas.
Run that sentence by me again, smart lady.
Currently, the infrastructure of our country runs on 80% of the fuels that we use for generating our heat and for transportation and for all other uses comes from fossil fuels. 80%. That is our current infrastructure. And the rest of it, the other 20%, is a mishmash of every other conceivable form of energy. Right. So that 80% represents everybody's ability to survive every year and go to work and heat their homes, survive the winter, cook their food, sterilize things. All of that is coming from those fossil fuels. Now, in order to get off of fossil fuels, we could be trying to bring down our use, right? We could be trying to drive less, but that means that people will be buying less gas, so there's all kinds of political reasons why that's not advocated. We could be cooking less. We could be finding ways to change our lifestyle in ways that would make us use a lot less fuel.
I think autonomous taxi services are probably going to be the way public transport will go. I mean, we're all used to having the convenience of an automobile as opposed to waiting for a bus, and we don't want to give that up. And with a taxi service, you don't have to give that up. And a taxi service will use only 10% of the vehicles that we currently have on the road.
How many years ago did you guys go off the grid?
2004.
Okay, 13 years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how much, Alan, do you guesstimate you've saved not paying to PG&E?
Well, our bill was like $200 a month.
Yeah, we were between $200 and $300 a month every month before we moved. So I guess we've saved probably at least $3,000 or $4,000 a year.
And what was your cost, Alan?
Well, we've had to do some costs in upgrading the batteries and solar panels. So it's not purely profit.
Well, how many thousands of dollars was your total cost?
Well, let's say we've probably saved $4,000 a year and we've probably invested $2,000 a year.
Very nice.
To improve
our system. Smart lady. What a smart husband. But, you know, ethically, environmentally, everybody should do what you've done.
It makes sense. It's getting cheaper all the time, too. Well, last time we upgraded our panels, it was just ridiculously cheap. And I think a lot of people are seeing that it's, hey, you know, you can buy this panel for $200 and it'll generate 200 watts of power for 20 years. You know, it's ridiculous.
Exactly. Have you written this up?
No.
You ought to write up your own experience. Let your smart wife do it.
No.
Okay? And then let's get it published.
All right. Thanks. Yeah. I like that assignment, for sure.
All right. All right. Hear that? All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Colonel. Take care.
Yeah, we have been off the grid for a very long time. We actually bought a house in Boulder Creek that was off the grid. It was a risk at the time.
It was a leap of faith. We went up there with not enough power, not enough bandwidth, and being city folks who made our living using our computers, and we gave ourselves 5 years to decide if we could make it or if we'd have to move back to the city. And every year, we made a breakthrough.
Etheric Networks has been great for bandwidth.
Yes, Etheric Networks saved us because we could not have stayed in the wilderness like that unless we had access to the internet. But since we do have great access to the internet that's very reliable with Etheric Networks, we have basically been investing in expanding our power so that we have plenty of power.
That and a paved road. I think really helps. Paved road. We have lived on dirt roads in the past, and it does make a difference to have a real paved road.
Yeah, but it's a different lifestyle. I mean, we literally, when the town goes out, when the power goes down, we don't notice because we have our own power.
But it's not without its issues. It's like a boat. When you live off the grid, you're paying attention to your supplies more, like your water supply, because we have to pump water with a generator. And we have to look at when it's cloudy, how that affects your solar power and all that kind of stuff. So it's, you do have to pay more attention, but ultimately it's much more satisfying.
Yeah, we like it.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. It's one of the magical things about Christmas, is I think, is that on that day, everybody, not just Christians, but everybody is in this place of just hanging out and playing.
Hang out and have fun.
Yeah.
Enjoy each other. And that's then, great advice.
Yes, and perhaps in the future, with the robots doing all the work, we'll have more days like that.
Oh,
we'll call them all kinds
of
names.
I'm sure that people everywhere are hoping that it gets easier.
Yeah. Well,
not
there's
harder.
No reason why not to. It's really up to us. Yeah, it's really kind of sad that politics is bogged down, that 51-49% decisions are slowing down healthcare and taxation and all these issues. If we really used our intelligence, those things would easily be resolved.
Yeah, well, maybe some of the hubbub is just extra static noise, and that a lot of problems are being solved. They're just not in the news.
Yeah. And Michael walked in here earlier and wanted to tell me about how fossil fuels are sun powered as well.
You have a good point, Michael. Thanks for pointing that out. Ancient sun, the sun from before they became fossils.
You just got to cook it for a few million years.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's an
Arthur
easy
wants
process.
Arthur wants to talk about fossil fuels. Yeah. Arthur in Prunedale. You ready to hear what he has to say?
Sure.
Hi, Arthur. Welcome
to the
show.
Welcome back.
Thanks for calling back.
Hey, you're welcome, Dr. Future, Mrs. Future. I want to tell you I'm a regular listener, and I enjoyed your guest.
Thank you.
It was delightful. That guest that you had on was wonderful.
Oh, yeah, she's awesome.
She is.
She's amazing.
Yes. And you had good questions, too.
Oh, thanks.
Well, you're welcome. The reason I'm calling is earlier, maybe around the top of the hour, Mrs. Future mentioned our production of all the energy that we use, I'll keep it brief, and approximated it around 80% was from fossil fuels. Now, it kind of gave me, I said, wow, are we making that much from the renewables? And then I thought, wait a second, that 20% has to be a lot of other things besides the renewables. I was thinking maybe a percentage of nuclear, hydrothermal dams.
Yeah.
Do you have...
Well, let me do a search on that.
All right, we'll see if you can. We can get you some real statistics. That's just kind of off the top of my head, but
I know that it is a
very large problem, and people in the traditional fuel industries still laugh at the idea of doing things with renewable fuels because they know that so much of our dependency is being met by existing infrastructure with fossil fuels.
Well, fossil fuels are sun, too. The sun is where it all comes from. That's why in a lot of cultures, sun has been God.
Yeah,
sure. A small portion of that energy hits the earth of the sun. A small portion of it, but it does all the petrol, it does all the solar, it does all the heating for biological life to exist.
It creates methane from compost, which creates
weather,
heat.
On and on and
the
on.
The sun is basically the source of all of our fuels.
Yeah, so keep that in mind. And as such, we're getting better at accessing solar energy from many different domains. It's putting out frequencies and energy on many different realms simultaneously.
Yeah, but we're talking about harvesting solar energy, not harvesting the remains of solar energy that are in the ground that we have to burn.
Well, that's the easiest to access, and it's 19th century thinking, so we were able to do that first.
Yeah.
And it totally makes sense. But we are now more sophisticated, at least in
the
creation of energy and tuning into the sun.
What we're doing with nuclear power
and what it does and how we can access. Energy. Nuclear power is another form of trying to emulate the sun. And it's just another way. There are many ways to access the solar energies.
But we're using nuclear power to generate heat, to create mechanical pressure, to run generators, or to heat things via basic steam engine kinds of technology. When you look at how we're using the state-of-the-art sources of power, we're still using them in ways that have been around for thousands of years. We're still basically trying to heat water.
Yeah.
No, it is.
It does seem kind of weird that we use our nuclear physics understanding of reality, which is pretty cool, to be able to boil water.
Right.
You know, there's
but
something missing there.
It just goes to show you that's what we need to do, right? Because when you use nuclear power to boil water, you create less pollution than when you burn enough fossil fuels to do what the nuclear power is doing. However, when you take into account the risk of contamination through radiation when you have a nuclear meltdown, then have you really saved yourself the trouble?
Well, I think there are other forms of more aesthetic fusion that I like.
Yeah. Well, it's a way of thinking.
It is. But like, for example, I think photosynthesis, amazing process.
Yeah.
Of sun energy.
That's right.
And it's very aesthetic.
That's right.
And it's very pretty. And chlorophyll is very related to hemoglobin. I might mention that.
Uh-huh.
So we have a lot of very strong connections with how nature connects with the sun that we've barely begun to tap.
Yes.
I mean, we think of chlorophyll as just for plants, but now with all the knowledge we have on biogenetic engineering and such, we can start creating more forms of synthetic energy using such processes as photosynthesis.
Yeah, well, nature has already figured all this stuff out, right?
Well, we have figured out a lot, too. We know how to use solar-powered battery chargers. Uh-huh. You know, we're starting to get it, and then we're getting better and better and better at it.
Yeah.
So, yes.
We were reading this weekend, we were kind of doing a little biological review, and we were studying fungus and lichens and the fact that the kingdom of fungus is an animal type kingdom in that they are reproducing with cellular membranes, right? But they can't do photosynthesis, so they're not really plants. But then lichens come in and help. Basically, mushrooms secrete digestive juices, and that's how they help the soil. Then you have lichens that connect mushrooms and plants and allow the mushrooms to eat what is being photosynthesized.
Yeah, it's a symbiotic relationship. It's called the fungi-lichen symbiotic relationship.
Anyway, so there's all kinds of things in nature that we can study and get smarter about.
A mutual lichen as an organism that creates a relationship between a fungus and a photosynthetic organism.
Okay, everybody. Arthur, thanks for your call. We got a few other folks we're going to go to.
Thank you. So great. You were great. Thank you both. Bye.
Thanks.
All right. Bill in Monterey, you have a solar question.
Yeah, I was wondering how many solar panels would it take, square footage, to run a standard size refrigerator? And my second question is, once these electric cars are totally discharged, how much electrical power and money does it cost to recharge the batteries to a full charge?
These are good questions, which we ask ourselves all the time.
Pragmatically, you had your sister visit with, she had a BMW, which she leased to try it out,
an
electric BMW. And she had range anxiety with it because
it only does
80 miles.
Yeah, right? She came and visited us, and she has about an 80-mile range.
Yeah, it's supposed to be 100, but it's about...
Where she has to recharge.
Yeah.
And she basically drove around for 60 miles and got to our place and was hoping that she could find a charger within 20 miles.
Basically, it was hard to get a charger. And when we did, it was about $6 for a full charge.
Oh, you know the price.
Yeah.
See, I know that she got down to 6 miles left in her car before she found a suitable charger.
Yeah, we have at the Multiversity. Multiversity has a great charger up in Scotts Valley.
But in terms of practical, the answer to your question, Bill, for us, we don't have a solar car because we would need to get a solar charged battery that has been promised at the level of the Tesla wall.
Yes.
And that's about $9,000, I think.
But for a refrigerator, it doesn't take so much. I mean,
you need 2 kilowatt hours.
Well, when you first turn on a refrigerator, it takes a lot of electricity. It's like a pulse. And it needs about at least 1,200, 2,000 at the high end.
Watts?
Of watts, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's regularly, it only runs at about 200, 300 watts, though. So you just need to be able to handle that initial pulse to turn it on. That's the hard part.
A large microwave, I think, is about 1,500 watts, but
yeah.
I'm wondering how big would the solar panels have to be to handle To run a refrigerator, for an hour, I mean.
Well, the main thing there, I think, is to charge up a battery with the solar and then use the battery to run the microwave or the refrigerator.
Yeah, the way the system works is the solar collects a little bit of energy trickling into the batteries.
Batteries can handle the amperage.
Long.
They can handle high amps and
then
solar panels
don't. And then the appliances tap into the batteries for, you run a microwave for maybe 3 minutes.
And the batteries handle the amperage that is needed for that.
Yeah. The solar panels wouldn't do it alone. You'd have to have a storage batteries
For that type of heavy-duty equipment, yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Compressors, stuff like that.
All right, listen, we got a couple of other calls in a couple more minutes.
All right, have a nice day. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Okay, let's say hi quick to Bobby on photosynthesis. Hi, Bobby. We have one other caller, so make it quick, okay?
Yeah, there was some interesting research that they found out. I think somebody got the Nobel Prize in 2003 or something for discovering what is photosynthesis, and it's actually cracking water. What that means is they're splitting oxygen and hydrogen apart. That gives the energy for the plants.
Gee, I wonder interesting. Wow.
And so there's, in MIT, they've synthesized the same chemical process. They create this crystal structure that can crack water. And so that's something to look into.
Yes, I will. Thank you. Send me some more information on that off air, would you, Bobby? So next, we have Dr. Toy checking in to give us the latest and greatest toys for the holiday season.
All right, folks. You're listening to the Dr. Future Show.